The Monday Morning Joe podcast is presented by Discount Garage Doors and Lakeland Auto Mall, Ford and Hyundai. At Discount Garage Doors, you can get a same-day free service call for an estimate, a diagnosis. Most competitors charge for that service, but not at Discount Garage Doors. And on top of that, they will beat any comparable estimate for your new garage door, service on your garage door, whatever you need. They are that competitive. Call 1-866-420-DOOR or visit dgdoors.com. Discount Garage Doors services the entire Tampa Bay area. They're a local Tampa Bay company, and they go all the way out to Orlando and beyond. Excellent service, excellent company. Again, 7 days a week. Use your 10% off Joe Bucks fan code. They've got a wide range of new doors. They really will take fantastic care of you. 1-866-420-DOOR. And at Lakeland Auto Mall, Ford and Hyundai, wow, it's the model year-end closeout right now where you can save up to $12,000 off MSRP with special dealer discounts on all 2017 Ford and Hyundai vehicles. $12,000 off, up to 12 grand off. Wow. Plus, every new vehicle purchase includes nationwide lifetime warranty and 1 year free maintenance. Again, I've talked about it before. Nationwide lifetime warranty is a special offer. Shop from nearly 1,000 vehicles in stock and make your selection by price or by payment. Shop online, get your best deal at LakelandFord.com, and then tell Lakeland Ford manager Sean Sullivan you're a Bucks fan, you're a stick carrier, you love JoeBucksFan.com, and get an additional $500 off your best deal on any new Ford. No other dealer can compare. Come to Lakeland Auto Mall today and find out why they are exceeding customer expectations every day. And again, hit them up online, LakelandAutoMall.com, LakelandFord.com. It's really a very easy trip right off I-4. They take good care of me. I know they're going to take good care of you. Happy Monday. Welcome on into Monday Morning Joe. Welcome back. Welcome for the first time, whoever you are. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com, one of the Joes, one of the founders, one of the guys writing on the website. If you don't like something on JoeBucksFan.com, it wasn't me. That's the rule we stick to on this podcast. But no, I'm just kidding on that. If you don't like it, that's fine. We never write to please anybody. Just call it as we see it. As Bucks fans, hardcore Bucks fans, who are also journalists and media guys and blending that to give you what is the most unique website out there for coverage of a team. And that's just not necessarily stroking myself here on the podcast. It is what it is. Not everybody likes JoeBucksFan.com, and that's fine. But the numbers keep growing. I have to express great appreciation. This podcast set a new record last Monday, and which is pretty darn cool. We keep getting bigger and bigger. We hit a top five episode on the iTunes platform last week at one point, which was a first. I think a number four overall. So that was pretty darn cool. And for once a week podcast especially. So awesome stuff. And JoeBucksFan.com, we appreciate all the traffic. We work for you 24/7. To bring you everything Bucks from every corner of the universe, at least what we think is interesting, and we appreciate it. Sunday, no snooze on JoeBucksFan.com. We were hammering away yesterday, giving you all different kinds of stuff on the website. All right, so the podcast. I don't want to get all negative and get all into the kicker, which is obviously the topic of the day, because I'm going to talk about the kicker later, and there's a chance when you first tune into this, the Bucks may have cut Nick Folk already. I don't know. It's Monday morning, and they haven't done that yet. So I'm not going to go crazy with that, especially not in the beginning here. A lot of people listen to the podcast on Tuesday, Monday night, so I'm not going to invest a ton of time in the Nick Folk decision. But what I am going to spend time on is Dirk Cutter's decisions. And this game against the Patriots as a whole was really kind of fascinating, and Cutter's taking a beating in a lot of areas. I'll give you an example. I tuned in to Mike Lombardi's podcast. Who's Mike Lombardi? Mike Lombardi is known as a personnel guru, worked his way up in the NFL. He was Browns general manager. He's had a lot of other positions. Browns obviously is not the greatest thing on your resume, but still, Lombardi is a great guy. Last year, he served as personal counsel / advisor to Bill Belichick. That's the kind of weight that Lombardi has. Belichick has called him a genius, and he's a smart guy. He's also an entrepreneur. You've seen him on television. He had started National Football Post. He got out of it. If you've ever visited that website, or it was more in its heyday back in 2009, 2010. Anyway, Lombardi is a very strong, educated voice, and I like listening to him. just for perspective. We don't write much about him on JoeBucksFan.com. But I thought it was interesting on his podcast, Lombardi, who was primarily talking about the Patriots. Again, he worked for them last year. He knows the organization inside and out. He talked on his podcast, flat out said Dirk Cutter did everything he possibly could to give the game away to the Patriots. And Lombardi was talking about the calls Cutter made, the clock management and other decisions. In Lombardi's opinion, Cutter was absolutely dreadful in his decision making. And there were a lot of decisions in that game by Cutter. And I understand where Lombardi was coming from, but is it fair? Is it fair? I know a lot of fans have been bitching about that and complaining and wondering what Cutter is up to. A lot of second guessing going on. But think about it. In this game, you had Cutter, 4th and 2. He opted not to go for it with Nick Folk struggling and attempt a 49-yard field goal. Didn't work. Bad result. 56-yarder at halftime. He went with a 56-yarder attempt instead of a Hail Mary throw. Now, we've got the big guys. We've got the big bodies. What's with Nick Folk, what's the better odds? A Hail Mary? Or with our receivers and the big bodies we have, or Nick Folk firing away from 56? There's a question for you right there. Not spiking the ball on the final drive. Now, the Tampa Bay Times killed Cutter for that. It caused a penalty. Cutter let us know that the DeMar Dotson offsides him, or his false start, that brought a penalty, and then a 10-second runoff of the clock in that critical situation with under a minute left, that it was a miscommunication between the center and the quarterback. It wasn't on Dotson. Well, we don't know exactly who that was on, but maybe you don't set up Ali Marpet in that situation, a new center, a guy with very limited experience, certainly very limited experience late in the game, like that, in a frenzy. Maybe you don't put that kind of pressure on him in that situation. You spike the ball, take a deep breath, don't risk that screw up with the center who's new. You could make that argument. Or you could just make the argument that that was the wrong call. Cutter, of course, says you don't spike because you keep the defense on its heels, and that defensive indecision in the frenzy is more valuable to the offense than stopping the clock, letting everybody reset. And you can argue that as well. You could say, sure, you're right, Dirk. You got Bill Belichick on the other side, one of the best defensive gurus ever, and I'd rather have them on their heels and flying, especially on the road, but it's a fair question. And then you've got the onside kick. The onside kick was big. Lombardi didn't like that either. The Bucs are trailing by 2. Late in the game, they're trailing 16-14, and they've got time on the clock, time to make the stop and get the ball back. And Cutter goes for the onside kick. Doesn't work. Nick Folk screws that up too. And I think that's a variable there. It's like Folk, his mind is off. Clearly, he's mentally off. I would think logically that carries over to an onside kick. Confidence and precision, which is what it takes on an onside kick. They relied on Cutter, on Folk there. He screwed it up. And okay, not the best kick, whatever. You're not going to get a big percentage of those onside kicks anyway. And the Patriots pounce on the ball. There's a small Bucs penalty on the play, offsides on Justin Evans, which is assessed. And then the Patriots get stuffed. They kick the long field goal. Bucs now down by 5, 19-14, and need a touchdown. So that backfired. When if you kick deep and got the stop, then you just needed a field goal. But in Cutter's defense, you could say if he knew at that point that a field goal was hopeless because of where Nick Folk's head was, then he had to go for the onside kick to give himself 2 shots at getting a touchdown. So you could make that argument there. Lastly, we'll go to him calling timeout. Late, Patriots had the ball right before the 2-minute warning. He called timeout to save time. Was that the right call? Was that the right call there? You could argue against that as well. So those are just 5 quick things that were decision-making aspects for Dirk Cutter that a lot of experts did not like. Now, I'm the kind of guy, I sit here, I've played a lot of sports. My father was a coach. I've been a baseball umpire. I've seen sports from all different kinds of angles, all sports. And decisions can be second-guessed left and right. When they work out, they're genius. When they don't work out, they're stupid. Now, it doesn't mean some aren't better than others. And there's always gamble and odds involved and risk and all that stuff. I can't sit here and say I like all of these moves by Cutter, especially the 49-yard field goal attempt. Now, I know Cutter would tell you, hey, we failed on 3rd and 2, so what makes you think we're going to get it on 4th and 2? We gave it our best shot on 3rd and 2. I know that's part of his mindset, and that makes sense. And he's paid the big money to assess the ability of his offense in any given situation. So if he decided that inconsistent Falk was better at a 49-yard shot than his offense, okay, that's fine, Dirk. But the bigger problem is, and the bigger question is, why did he come to that conclusion? That's the problem. So let's say he was right. Let's say the Bucs had a better chance at that moment of that 49-yard Nick Folk field goal. If Cutter was right, then why? Why was he right? That's the core of the question. Why is the number one overall pick quarterback and all the weapons, why are they not better, a better option than Nick Folk? So that's what really has to be explored. And I certainly don't have the answers to that. I don't necessarily agree with that, but I want to know why the coach really thought that. And we're not going to get that. We're just not going to get that right there, right now. Part of it, I guess, is a combination of things, from the lack of a short yardage game. This team does not have a short yardage game. Sorry, it just doesn't. Jameis Winston doesn't sneak. Doug Martin got into the end zone. That was great. Barely. I'm not knocking him getting into the end zone on short yardage, but this is not a strong short yardage team, and that's an issue. 4th and 1.5, 1.75, and you're handing it over to a lousy field goal kicker. I think we've seen a cutback in Jameis rolling out and going right into a creative play out of the gate. The Bucs are doing a lot less of that this year, in my opinion, from what I've seen. I'm not sure why. Jameis is great on the run. He's clearly able to be physical and make some decent. He's made good decisions in the past running the football. This is a guy who was freewheeling and, 3rd and 19 against the Falcons a couple of years ago. I think Jameis, I like our odds with him on 4th and 1.5, rolling out right and making some decisions and having deep options. Now, of course, you roll out right, you cut the field in half. I get that, but I don't know. We got the quarterback. We got the weapons to use them. And maybe Cutter's learned a lesson on that. Maybe not. But I'd love to know really why he didn't think he had the juice to get 1.5 yards against a Patriots defense that isn't very good. So that's something to look at there, to wonder. Why not the Hail Mary with Jameis at halftime? Mike Evans, he's the best guy on the field to catch that pass or draw a flag. Happens all the time every year in the NFL. There aren't that many 56-yard field goals. I don't know. Spiking the ball, you can look at it both ways. The onside kick was odd. But to me, that just speaks to, if it works, you're a genius. There still had a little bit of the element of surprise there. I can't kill the guy for taking a chance. We like risk-taking coaches. But if you're going to be a risk-taking coach who nails an onside kick trailing by 2 when you have time on the clock and timeouts and all that stuff, then why don't you take this? Isn't it a better risk on 4th and 2? Or some of the other risks, aren't they just as valuable? And calling timeout with the Patriots, that actually worked out for the Bucs, so I can't kill him there. But Cutter is taking a beating for his decision-making. That's a tough spot for a coach. That's where a coach doesn't want to be. If you're going to lose a game, if you're going to lose, you want fans talking about players who didn't execute. You want fans talking about, man, he just didn't have it, or he dropped a couple of balls, or, you know, they didn't dive on that fumble, and whatever it is. As a coach, you don't want fans and national media talking about your decision making. And that's where Cutter is right now. That's a tough spot. What do the Glazers think? What does Jason Light think? You think Jason Light sits in the press box or his suite and agrees with all of those Cutter calls? You got to be kidding me. You wouldn't find 5 football men to agree with all of those 5 calls on those plays that I just mentioned. Now, that's what makes the game great. That's what makes it fantastic. Look, we'd sit here and talk about personnel, whether it be Doug Martin or draft picks or players or whoever it might be. And the beauty of this game, part of the beauty, is that it is so complex that 2 people can assess a player, and one guy thinks he's draftable, another guy thinks he's hot garbage. And this happens all the time in the NFL. All the time in the NFL. Free agency. There are swings and misses. First round draft picks fail at about a 60% rate, top to bottom in the draft. 1 through 32 in the first round. So there are no perfect answers, and that's what makes the game great. So I can't go nuts on Cutter here, but I don't think it was his best game, and I don't think the Giants game was necessarily his best game. So we're keeping an eye on it. Let's put it that way. We're keeping an eye on it. I know if Dirk was listening to this, he would laugh, or he'd be like, you know, I've been coaching 30-something years, and you guys, and what do you know? But that's what we do. That's what we're here for. I think the bigger point is just that I'm not ready yet. Don't think it's necessary yet to kill Cutter for his time management and his decisions in that realm yet. I just don't think it's warranted yet. Something to monitor. We're looking for patterns. He's still a newer head coach. He's still a winning head coach. And that's one reason on JoeBucksFan.com we usually introduce first reference to Dirk is winning head coach. Because that means a lot in this league. It is not easy to win. And he's a winning head coach. He's a head coach with a winning record. And there's got to be some respect for that, appreciation for it. And it doesn't mean we're not ready to blast Dirk when it's warranted. But as far as time management and some of those broad game decisions, not there yet. One thing I will say, though, is Peyton Barber. Where the hell is this guy? Where is he? We heard about how he was one of the most improved players of the Bucs offseason. That came out of Coach Cutter's mouth. We saw him run well against the Bears. Reasonable defense on the Bears. Nothing great, not awful. Everybody knew Barber was running when he was in the game. He did pretty well. Then he disappeared. On Thursday night, Doug Martin, who had a fantastic comeback, really did everything anybody could have asked. A lot of people wanted to see him carry the rock 20 times or let them keep pounding him because he had some success. Come on. Let's be fair to the guy. I'm not the biggest Doug Martin fan. Anybody listening to the podcast knows that. But he was fantastic Thursday night, coming back, providing a spark, running well. But he was not in football shape. Dirk Cutter admitted this twice. Really got into a little bit more detail on SiriusXM NFL Radio on Friday night. You can read that story at JoeBucksFan.com. He said Martin was gassed after that drive where they really used him. And look, when a player's gassed, I get it. He's gassed. But the bottom line is Martin was on a low football tank. And they weren't going to go back to that in that game. I bet you, I would bet anything that the drops that Martin had, those two drops, questionable passes, yes. Passes on target, no. Balls Martin should catch, yes. Call them whatever you want. You don't have to call them drops. But some of that goes to fatigue. Some of that goes to fatigue as it relates and then causing mental fatigue. And that's just, it's hard to be on point when you've been off of football for so long. Look, Martin did not play in the fourth preseason game. I watched him walk out of the locker room with a big smile on his face. He also hadn't practiced for 2 days before that. That's going back into August now. So I'm willing to cut the guy some slack. No pads in practice previously. So I just don't think it's fair. It's not slack is the wrong word. It's not fair to have expected him to really take on much more of a load. But where's Peyton Barber? If the guy's a good football player, we could have used him later in that game. At least give him a shot to create a spark. Didn't happen. To see if he could sustain on the ground, didn't happen. Patriots came into that game allowing 5 yards, I think it was 5.1 yards a carry. So that was a little bit confusing, to say the least. Switching gears real quick, let me head over to the Bucs in general. A lot of fans, we have a good pulse of the fans on JoeBucksFan.com. I take a lot of emails from fans all the time and talk to people, of course, as well. There's a lot of people on the fence and a lot of people who think this is a good team and recognize that, you know what, we just played the Patriots and Dirk Cutter admits there were 6 to 8 drops and the field goal kicker was historically bad and we were still within one play of winning the game. A lot of people think that's pretty good. And this franchise is 2-2, haven't been there two wins or better after four games since 2011. The defense is playing some good football. Not everybody, we'll get to that, but the defense is doing some really good things out there. 19 points to the Patriots. This was a high-flying offense entering the game, and it shouldn't have even been that many if, you know, most likely if the Bucs were able to handle the game a little differently on offense or with their field goal kicking. But that's another angle, another story. The team, I don't believe they're in some sort of deep danger here. Sure, you lose to Arizona. Everybody's screwed. You can't drop a conference game to a bad football team, which the Cardinals are right now. They have lost. Their three losses are double digits. Their two wins are against the Colts and the Niners by a field goal. They're not a good football team right now. They got worked over by the Eagles. Carson Palmer is hardly special anymore. This is not a special season for him. And they're just not as good as they used to be. This is a game the Bucs have to win. You know, you can lose to a Patriots, lose an out-of-conference game, no problem. Those are the ones you want to lose if you're circling them on paper. If you think you're a 10-win team, that's what you want to lose. But those in-conference games that go to the tiebreakers and go to the head-to-head, you know, including the head-to-head matchups and common opponents and conference record, all those tiebreakers, you just can't lose that game. This week is way more of a must-win than the following week in Buffalo will be. Yeah, that's just the reality of the NFL playoff system and the schedule. Bucs have to win against Arizona. Critical win. You go to Buffalo the next week, you could drop that game. You don't want to. We're not suggesting it. But you could drop that game. You can't drop this game here. The NFC, it is shaping up as a year where you're going to need 11 wins as a wild card in the NFC. And that was the case this decade. I think it was 3 years in a row. Might have been 2013, 14, and 15. I don't have it in front of me, but you needed 11 wins to get into the playoffs. And it's looking that way. There's just better teams in the NFC. Carolina at 4-1. It's a difficult spot. Difficult spot there for the Bucs. I don't think anybody was necessarily expecting that from Carolina. They had an easier schedule to start, but Cam Newton is playing lights out. Lights out. And he was coming off shoulder surgery. And there were question marks surrounding him physically this season. Atlanta is Atlanta. And the Saints are 2-2 and regrouping, and they've overcome a 2-0 start. It's a tough division, as always. I was listening to Rich Eisen. It has a great show. I really enjoy the Rich Eisen show. Locally, it's on 1040 a.m. from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m., but I catch it a lot on just online or on podcast. He was adamant that the NFC South is the best division in football. Now, Rich Eisen isn't the gospel, but I think that's pretty much the overwhelming consensus out there. The NFC South is brutal, and the Bucs need to win certain types of games this year. It's going to be one of those years, and Arizona on Sunday is that game. But I know a lot of fans are trending all negative and stuff. I mean, just calm down. Calm down. I don't think I personally predicted a 10-6 season. I'm not seeing anything that leads me to believe that they can't do that. Maybe the biggest negative, if we want to go negative first, the biggest negative for me would be Vernon Hargreaves. He's been bad. Bad. Bad game against New England. Not playing good football. And he hasn't advanced. He hasn't progressed as a second-year guy. And every coach everywhere, every personnel guy will tell you, second-year players, those are the guys making the biggest leap. Those are the guys you need to step up and step through and become the player they were supposed to be when they were drafted, if they weren't, you know, a miraculous rookie. And Hargreaves certainly wasn't a miraculous rookie, but the expectation was there. And we were told Hargreaves is going to be more aggressive this year. That was the edict to him from the day he came back in April. More aggressive. Let loose. Go for it. And you know what? He hasn't done that. And that's his game. He's got to show his athleticism. He's got that. That's his game, is athleticism. And it's not showing up when he's given all this cushion. Again, what did he learn from the Giants game? Or from previous games? I'm not sure what he really did. He's got no picks this year. He hasn't been special. He's been picked on, and he will continue to be picked on because you got two choices out there, Brent Grimes or Vernon Hargreaves. It's a very easy decision right now. Now, one thing I wrote yesterday on JoeBucksFan.com, Ricky Reynolds, former Bucks cornerback. I think he was here 6 years and then with the Eagles for 4 years. I don't really remember. But late 80s, early 90s guy. Spent 10 years in the league. Now, Ricky Reynolds, if anybody has met him before, he lives locally. He's an analyst for Fox 13 right now. He's a mild-mannered guy. This is not a guy who's out there to skewer people and to rip players apart or anything like that. He's Ricky Reynolds. He's just not that guy. Well, you know what? Yesterday, he's on Fox 13, Scott Smith's tailgate show, which we love because it features Ira Kaufman, Kaufman's Corner, sage of Tampa Bay sports, a Joe Bucks fan columnist and Hall of Fame voter. Anyway, Ricky Reynolds is on there, and he's blasting Vernon Hargreaves from the start of the show. Now, this is a guy who played 10 years at corner. And he comes, you know, they get into some deeper analysis, and he's saying he's playing too soft. I'm quoting Ricky Reynolds now. He's definitely playing too soft. I think it's all mental. I think he's a guy that has the skills and all the abilities to make plays, but he's thinking that he's going to get beat deep every time. He needs to not worry about that and rely on his abilities, blah, blah, blah. He can't let short passes like that get hit so easily in front of him. And Reynolds actually, which was a big deal for him, and I bring this up specifically, he was so down on Hargreaves that he said that he thinks Hargreaves will be the bounce back guy of the week in Arizona because he was so bad against New England that he can't get any worse. And again, this is legitimate commentary from a 10-year NFL veteran at the position, a guy not prone to hyperbole. So it's scary. And if Hargreaves can't be fixed, if Hargreaves can't be repaired, he's not getting off the field. The Bucs are going to ride him. He's a first-round pick. He's got to develop. They're going to stick by him this year. That is the deal. They're certainly not trading for anybody. Ryan Smith would be just as much of a horror show. And I don't think they're going to go to Robert McClain in that situation as their nickelback. It is Hargreaves all the way. If there's one thing that might derail the Bucs defense this year, it's going to be Hargreaves if he can't step up. And that's a reason to be scared. Reason to be optimistic about the Bucks going 10-6 is that I just think those drops, which I mentioned before, you know, drops are drops. Even if it's five drops, even though Dirk Cutter said 6-8. I was talking with Sean Sullivan at Lakeland Ford. Of course, you want to all visit Lakeland Ford, lakelandautomall.com, as we mentioned at the start. But he's the manager there, big Bucks fan. He was saying 10 drops by his count. And drops are very subjective. I'm not saying anybody's right or wrong. But you know what? The coaches review that and they assign drops to players and those guys will dispute things. And they're pretty on point because they put in all the effort in it. But even if it's five, even though we know it's six, by my count, I was going with seven. That's a lot of drops. That's not on Jameis. That's an extraordinary amount of drops in a game. So I know there's a lot of Jameis haters, a lot of bashers out there. Oh, Jameis isn't Carson Wentz. Jameis isn't stepping up. Jameis doesn't look like a franchise quarterback. In this division, he's got to be better if we're going to go anywhere. And Jameis and his decision-making, you can't expect the guy to be perfect. We can hold a high bar, but you got to be realistic. You got to be realistic. He's really not having a bad year. He's only thrown a pick in one game, but no picks from Jameis in 3 out of 4 games? I'll take that all day long. The chemistry issues with DeSean Jackson, they don't look pretty. And I think some of that, a little bit, has got to be on Jackson for not showing up in OTAs. But they look pretty good in training camp. They were clicking. It'll come. It'll come. I don't think anybody thinks that Jameis can't throw deep or can't connect with a receiver. That's just ludicrous. You know, Cameron Brate's not getting massive separation. There are some amazing throws that Jameis Winston has made and will continue to make. And you listen to the quarterbacks who watch Jameis, the quarterbacks. They like Jameis. They appreciate Jameis. The Phil Simms, the other analysts of the world, they know what they're watching. Doesn't mean the decision-making is always right, but the capability is there, and we see it in every single game. So we'll see where that goes. JoeBucksFan.com, I want to call your attention to three quick events. One, go to JoeBucksFan.com/golf. That's Todd Wright's next 12th tournament on the Todd Wright Tour. You sign up at JoeBucksFan.com. These are extremely inexpensive golf tournaments. great value, tremendous prizes. They're all about fun. They're all a little bit unique. They all have an NFL football picks component to them, which is really cool. And they're extremely popular. We already have 100 signed up for this latest tournament. Almost all of them sell out, and you still got a little bit of time. It's on October 22nd. Get all the details, joebucksfan.com/golf. If you like golf and you don't want to spend a lot of money and you want to get into some competition and have a good time with Bucks fans and football fans, there's a reason why these golf tournaments are so darn popular. Nobody sells golf tournaments without a charity hook these days, but we do at joebucksfan.com. And of course, Abe's Place, Ira Kaufman is going to be out there on October 22nd. Ira Kaufman making an appearance. You can watch the game with the Sage of Tampa Bay Sports at Abe's Place, Bucks at Bills. What more can I say about that? And lastly, fanretreat.com, fanretreat.com, your home for tickets, travel, hotels. Check out the website if you haven't been there yet. Anyway, they are hosting another fan retreat event the night before the Falcons game in Atlanta featuring Ira Kaufman. Wow, it's going to be quite an event. Count on free food, free beer, and the Sage of Tampa Bay Sports taking questions and giving out all kinds of insider info. And we're planning on a couple of very special guests for that event. So you'll get the details coming up soon at joebucksfan.com and, of course, at fanretreat.com as well. And lastly, normally I would go over the game, sort of all kinds of details of the game and stuff that happened, but I think the passion's already out of the game at this point on a Monday. The freak out is over. All the emotion is sort of taken out of it a little bit, or it should be. I know some people are still pissed off at Nick Folk, but otherwise, not the end of the world. I'm not jumping off a ledge. I don't think you should either. As far as Nick Folk goes, though, look, there are a lot of people screaming for his head. And I think, and I put this out on Twitter, and I mentioned it in a story, the most important decision here for the Bucks is to start acting like a business when it comes to Nick Folk. And what I mean by that is this team has got to look at its kicker evaluation and realize that it sucks, realize that, yes, they've had some bad luck, but it's not all bad luck. Their kicker evaluating stinks. Stinks. So what's going to change if they keep using the same evaluators to evaluate a kicker and pull one off the street because they think he looks good in a workout today at $1? Now, I get that they have no confidence in Nick Folk, and you can't play football and expect to make the playoffs. You can play football all day long. You can go through a season with a kicker that's not so great and you don't have confidence in. But make the playoffs? What teams make the playoffs with a crap kicker? It happens, sure. We've had our Blair Walsh situations out there, but I'm stretching a little bit on that. But still, the Bucks need a kicker that they're confident in. But how are fans supposed to be confident in their ability to pick that kicker? I'm not. I don't think they know what they're doing. And that's just based on what we've seen. That's the evidence. It's a freaking circus, what we've experienced here for years. Even Greg Schiano, going back to that, I forget the guy, his name's escaping me, the guy who kicked in 2013, who, if he was a better kicker early in that season, Josh Freeman might still be around these parts. What was his name? Damn it. All right. Anyway, it's just been bad. Jason Light has misfired on so many kickers. And here we are with Bucks trying out 6 kickers supposedly today, maybe 7, maybe it's 8. I don't think they know what they're looking for. So whoever the name is, we'll cross our fingers. We'll pray. We'll do all the things that we do and just hope that they get a nice little run of luck out of this kicker. I don't know what they're going to do next year. Obviously they'll probably have a kicking competition, but if nothing changes, if nothing changes in the process, don't expect anything to change in the result. You can only get lucky so many times, and the Bucks haven't had that luck with the kicking position. So it's a mess. It's unfortunate. Should they give Nick Folk another chance? Should they give him one more game? Should they let him try to right the ship? I know it sounds crazy. It sounds crazy. And I'm all behind getting a new kicker. But if you're not going to change the process, and you know that Nick Folk has had success in this league, he's in good shape, He's got his head on straight. He's kicked in New York. He has dealt with adversity in his career. You got to ask yourself the question, is it more likely that he bounces back or that some guy off the street turns out to be a decent kicker? I don't know what the answer is, but if you don't change the process, then maybe you're better off sticking with Folk. I wouldn't do it, but I would consider carrying two kickers. I would consider putting a guy, a kicker on the practice squad to really get a deeper sense of these guys' development and who, you know, who, if the kicker has been around little enough to get on a practice squad. It's just a mess, which is why I'm sort of almost talking in circles, because it's a mess. The easy answer, cut Folk, sign a guy, see what happens, on to the next guy if this guy doesn't work. That's probably the easiest way to go. Is it the smartest? I don't know. And when you have guys picking a kicker who can't pick a kicker, well, that's like guys picking a defensive end who can't get 10 sacks. You know, good, because the Bucs are last in the planet in having a double-digit sacker for this century, that's for sure. Anyway, a lot going on around the league yesterday that applied to the Bucs. I wrote something up on joebucksfan.com. It was 10 things, Bucs-related things that happened yesterday. Some of them I thought were kind of interesting, kind of funny. The thing that's in my craw is Calais Campbell, his continued success with the Jaguars and their stifling defense. The dude, the man beast, has 6 sacks on the season. The Bucs have 4 as a team. And Dirk Koetter put it out there. Dirk Koetter is the guy who said, we don't have $17 million laying around for Campbell. Well, it wouldn't have cost that much. And if you didn't sign Swaggy, it all of a sudden costs a lot less. And I don't think the Bucs really could afford to have not signed Campbell, or at least gone in to make a play on him. And Bucs fans, this is a pet peeve of mine, Bucs fans love to crow about how, oh, we got to save money to re-sign our guys, and Donovan Smith and Ali Marpet and Jameis and Mike Evans and Cameron Brate. And they just go through the laundry list, Quan Alexander and all this stuff. Well, you know what? The reality of the NFL is that all those guys aren't going to be healthy to re-sign. All of those guys aren't going to play well enough for you to want to re-sign them. All of those guys may not be your best option as things progress. One tiny example, this came up, I think, in an Ira Kaufman podcast. Look at Kendall Beckwith, an amazing rookie start. One of the leaders in the NFL in solo tackles. He's calling the defense. He's played multiple positions in 4 games. He's been a monster. He's been a workhorse. He's 8 and a half, 9 months off ACL surgery. He might be the next replacement for Levante David. He may replace David in this lineup by the time David's up for another contract, or the Bucs make that decision. You're not going to pay 3 linebackers big bucks. Things change. Donovan Smith has a bad year, let's say, in his contract year. All of a sudden, things totally change. Ali Marpet isn't the center you thought. Things can change. The odds of all those players needing a new deal is flimsy, and the salary cap keeps going up, although it'll probably nosedive if the NFL loses revenue as a result of loss of TV ratings and maybe tied to some of this Anthem stuff. It might level off finally. But I don't think you can play so worried about a future contract in a league where guys get hurt left and right. I just don't think that makes a lot of sense, and I don't think the better teams necessarily operate that way. They just make sure they pick the right guys so they don't have a contract dead money on their cap or guys who are just total flameouts. But I don't think you can worry too much about that. So that's why I give the Bucs a thumbs down on not pursuing Calais Campbell, who was a perfect fit for this defense and really probably for any defense in the National Football League. Look at Odell Beckham. Are the Giants going to pay him the huge money? Are they going to wait to see if he's healthy after breaking his ankle? Look at all the other injuries, J.J. Watts and others. I don't know. We just want the Bucs to win. We want the best for our team, and I think the Bucs are going to win in Arizona. I'm going to pick them to win again. I picked them to win against the Patriots. They should have freaking won against the Patriots, so I don't even feel that bad about the pick. But if this Bucs team, these Bucs are a good team, a 10-win team, a competitive playoff possible team, they have to win in Arizona, and I'm going to pick them to win by 10 points, just the way Arizona's losing to everybody else. I think the Bucks take the game 30-20, and I don't know who's going to kick a field goal and make it 30, but we'll worry about that another time. All right, thanks for following the podcast. Subscribe for a free alert, Podbean, iTunes, Google Play. Tell a friend, share it, send your feedback. Appreciate the comments under the podcast, good, bad, whatever. LakelandFord.com, LakelandAutomall.com, Discount Garage Doors. Use your 10% off Joe Bucks fan code. Check them out. We appreciate their support as much as we appreciate yours. Have a great week.